Today, the Great Australian Nightmare. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of those posts covering finance and property news. Today, I'm going to take you through our top-level results from our household surveys to December 2024. And as you'll see, the news is not great for many households, either in the rental sector or indeed with a mortgage. Before I do that, this is a very important article, which was just published, and it really underpins everything that I'm seeing in my surveys. The article says that the dream of property ownership has turned into a nightmare. And they cite analysis from Canstar that shows that it's really impossible now to buy a home in Sydney. The report revealed a single Sydneysider would need a before-tax income of $234,960 to afford the loan for the average Sydney house, which is currently valued at $1.47 million. And it also showed that a Sydney couple of any age who each had a national average salary of $103,000 would not be approved for a loan to buy a house in metropolitan Sydney at the current state average. In fact, the Canstar analysis revealed the two before-tax incomes of $113,340 or more and the deposit of close to $300,000 would be needed to be approved for the average house in the Harbour City. In Melbourne, it wasn't quite as bad. A salary of $141,580 were needed to afford the median house. And the figures there are also available for Brisbane and Adelaide. And interestingly, in other research, they highlight the fact that some younger Australians now no longer have the aspiration to own a house and are looking for other financial aspirations. This is a big deal, and it very much chimes with what I'm seeing in my surveys, insofar that the pressure on households is continuing to build as affordability continues to deteriorate. And frankly, there's no end to this, given, of course, as I discussed the other day, interest rates are likely to stay high for longer now, especially with the exchange rate being so low. Anyway, with that introduction, let me now take you through the latest analysis. And I'll just start by recapping the method that we use. So we have rolling household surveys. They run all the time. And we have a 0.5% sample across Australia. The data is very frequently updated. And this information is to the end of December 2024. And we can slice and dice the data lots of different ways. Think of it as a Rubik's Cube. And as well as that, we can also think about what may be happening ahead by running some scenarios. And we'll touch on those scenarios shortly as well. And we take the data on mortgage stress, the price trajectory, the history information on property in the area, the buying and selling intentions we're getting from the surveys, the migration data, the economic data more broadly. And we put all of that into our core market model, run it through the scenarios, and then we can look at it at a postcode level, and roll it up to a region, state, and all Australia level, and also form some views as to what may be happening ahead. Let me just say that we do offer a one-to-one service. If you want a more detailed conversation about a particular suburb, we can do that. And I can look at the underlying data in the model, but I should say that this is not financial advice, but we can look at house price trends data and also think about what may be happening ahead based on our modelling. The conversation normally takes about an hour via Zoom or phone, and there is a cost involved because I have to do quite a lot of research and I publish a 35-page report or so with each conversation. But if you are interested, you can contact me by the DFA blog. I'm booking about 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment because there's high demand for this particular service. Anyway, let me talk about stress now because it's important to understand how we define stress. We define stress in cash flow terms, money in, money out. This is really important because there are other mechanisms that are used. For example, 30% of income, although it's never clear whether it's taxable income or net income, through to some underwriting metrics that other people use. But we think that cash flow is the best method to look at what's going on. Money in, money out. So if households have more outgoings, excluding one-off discretionary items like holidays, than income, we define them as stressed. If they have a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. Investors with cash flow pressures are identified as stressed investors, and we can roll the data up to estimate the total financial stress at a postcode level. And we express each as a percentage of households and also a count. The latter is probably better because it gives you the law of big numbers. Where are the large counts of households in difficulty? Now, the RBA published this chart last year, which shows that there's a spectrum of household financial stress from the mild end budget pressures via missing payments through to insolvency at the severe end. I am measuring stress at that mild end, so the budget pressures, when effectively there is more money going out than coming in on a consistent basis. That, of course, leads to problems later. But this is a good model, and it also explains why it is that you can have insolvency quite low whilst budget pressures are very high. That's because it can take 3 to 5 years for households to slide across from budget pressures via missing payments through to insolvency. And in the meantime, with property prices where they are, some people are selling and getting out before they slide into the missing payments part of the spectrum. Anyway, the data to December shows that from the point of view of rental stress, it was up at 76.4%. So that's more than three quarters of those in the rental sector have cash flow pressures at the moment. It's very, very high and has been sitting at this high level now for quite some time. Looking at mortgage stress, just over half of households with a mortgage have cash flow pressures. Compare that with February 2020 before COVID, when it was at 32.9%. So you can see the consistent climb up, despite, of course, the changes in the environment. And of course, the interest rates have been rising significantly in recent times, thanks to the RBA. Overall, the debt-to-income ratio is still sitting at around 183%. From the RBA again, but that actually is a bit distorted because it includes businesses and includes all households. If you were to look at those with just a mortgage, then the typical debt-to-income ratio is above 6 now, particularly for new borrowers, and some at 7, 8 and 9 times. Housing affordability is bust. So here is the data to December 2024 at the state level, and you can see here that we are displaying the count of households by state with mortgage stress, rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress, and also the percentages. I've also highlighted in yellow where the percentages have risen from last month and in blue where they've fallen. And if there's no highlight, then they have not moved at all. And so you can see there that in the ACT, mortgage stress isn't too bad at 37.9%, but rental stress at 84%. Is extremely high. Overall financial stress is at 48%, and that's around 88,000 households in financial stress in the ACT. In New South Wales, more than half of households are in mortgage stress. That's more than 548,000 households. The rental stress is 82.5%, which is 855,000 households. And the overall financial stress is more than 1.5 million. The NT moves around quite a lot because it's a low count, but you can see there that overall financial stress is at 30.9%. In Queensland, the financial stress rose to 46.4%. That's more than 932,000 households in financial stress. Of that, we see 43.9% in mortgage stress, 74.5% in rental stress, and some investors also having some difficulties. Now, in South Australia, we see 43.1% of households in financial stress. That's 318,000 households. And of that, 53.3% are in mortgage stress. So that's at the upper end of the range. 68.5% in rental stress. And overall, you can see there that the pressure in South Australia is really being turned up now. In Tasmania, again, a relatively small sample. The rental stress at 79%, that's more than 47,000 households, and overall financial stress at 45% is more than 100,000 households across Tasmania. In Victoria, things ease very slightly, but there are still 46% of households in financial stress, that's more than 1.2 million, with 53% in mortgage stress, more than 528,000, 75% in rental stress, more than 556,000. And the story there is still of some difficulty, even though now house prices in Victoria are easing. And in Western Australia, there was a little bit of a pullback, but overall 46% of households are in financial stress. That's more than 477,000. More than half are in mortgage stress. That's 220,000. And 71% in rental stress, more than 205,000. So overall across Australia, the number of households in mortgage stress across the country is 1.8 million households, based on my definition. In rental stress, 2.3 million households. The stressed investor count is now just over 509,000. And that means that 47.6% of households, or 4.7 million households, out of the 9.95 million households across Australia, have financial stress and so have cash flow issues. This is a national disaster. Now, we can also slice and dice the data differently by looking at our cohorts. And I've highlighted here the cohorts with the highest level of stress. So not a surprise, perhaps, that from a mortgage stress perspective, we see that young growing families at 90% have the biggest pressures. More than 292,000 households across the country have significant financial pressures in mortgage land. Rental stress is highest among first-generation Australians, particularly those coming in and buying later, but renting in the meantime, at 87.2%. That means that there are more than 200,000 new migrants into Australia with rental stress pressure. The investor stress is found amongst more affluent households, and it's interesting to see that the exclusive professionals, which are the more affluent households at 29.2%, have significant financial pressures, and that's about 82,000 stressed investors in that cohort. The young affluents are also quite well exposed as well. And overall financial stress, in summary, the cohorts with the highest level of financial stress are the young growing families, including first-time buyers across the country, at 67.6%. And that is more than 500,000 households in significant pressure in that cohort. So you can see that whilst it's spread across all of the different segments, young growing families, first-time buyers, are right on the leading edge. Now, if we then look at mortgage stress in more detail, we can look it down the postcode level. And the postcode with the highest level of mortgage stress, based on the count of households, is in postcode 2170, that's Liverpool, and includes places like Moorbank, Mount Pritchard, Warwick Farm, Chipping Norton. There, more than 13,000 households have problems, and that gives us a mortgage stress percentage of more than 95%. Next, we go to Campbelltown, postcode 2560, and there, more than 11,700 households are in mortgage stress. Then we go to Western Australia, to places around Wanneroo and Tapping, and there we have more than 11,400 households in mortgage stress. Then we go to Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350, with 10,300. Then we go to Victorian postcode 3029, Hoppers Crossing and Tarnit, with more than 10,200. And another postcode, 3805 in Victoria, Narre Warren, where we have 9,600 households in difficulty. Then back to Camden in New South Wales, 2570. And there we have 9,300, followed by another Victorian postcode, 3064, including Craigieburn and Donnybrook, with 9,300 households. There we have another Victorian postcode, 3810, Pakenham, with 9,300 households. Then Berwick and Harkaway, again in Victoria, 3806, with more than 9,000. Then back to Riverston in New South Wales at 2765, including Berkshire Park, Nelson, and Oakville, with more than 8,600. Then back to Cranbourne, postcode 3977 in Victoria, with 8,600. And then Ballarat, regional postcode there, 3350, with more than 8,400. So it's worth highlighting here that the common theme in many of these postcodes is a lot of new development, a lot of recently purchased property, particularly from first-time buyers. And the net result of all this is that more households are in difficulty at the moment. Now, I also modelled the potential risk of default over the next 12 months based on the cash flow pressures and the historic trends. Here that Cranbourne in Victoria, postcode 3977, is at the top of the list with more than 950 households risking default over the next 12 months at 4.2% of households. Then we go across to Western Australian postcode 6210, including Mandurah, where we have 780. Now, it's interesting here, whilst prices have gone up recently, a lot of people were caught because the previous few years saw significant drops in prices, and a lot of people bought in with very high mortgages and are still under the pump. Then we get a postcode 3064, Roxburgh Park in Victoria, Craig Gibburn and Donnybrook, with 677. And then Hobbs Crossing, another Victorian postcode, 3029 with 643. Then Gosford, Central Coast, postcode 2250 with 619. Armidale in Western Australia, 6112 with 606. And when we go up to around the Gladstone area, 4702 with 605. Success in Western Australia, 6164 with 589. And then Point Cook in Derrimont, in postcode 3030 in Victoria with 560, Bundaberg in Queensland 4670 with 547, and Toowoomba 4350 with 538. Now, if I switch across to rental stress, you can see there that the postcode with the highest rental stress across the country is postcode 3000, the centre of Melbourne. There we have more than 15,500 households in rental stress at 86% of all households renting. In Liverpool, 2170, we have 14,200 households in rental stress. The next is 4350 at Toowoomba in Queensland with 14,138. Then we go to postcode 4215 in Southport, Labrador, with 11,000. Then we go to Point Cook and Derrimut in Victoria, 3030 with 10,500. Then New South Wales postcode 2017, Zetland with 10,400. Then we go to Westmead and South Wentworthville, 2145 with more than 10,400 again. Then we go to Campbelltown, 2560 with 10,400. Then postcode 3029 at Tarnit, with 10,200. Then Coomera up in Queensland, 4209 with 9,900. Then Mount Druitt, postcode 2770 with 9,300. Bundaberg, 4670 with 9,300. And Yatala, postcode 4207 with 9,200. And just dropping off the page there, 4101 Highgate Hill in Queensland. If we then look at stressed investors, this is, of course, investors who are having difficulty making their mortgages work on their investment properties because the investment yield is insufficient to cover the cash flow of the property and perhaps are thinking of selling. So you can see here that stressed investors are highest up in West Australian postcode 6014, including Wembley, with more than 4,000. Then we go to Happy Valley up in Queensland, 4825 at more than 3,500. Bundaberg in Queensland, 4670 at 2814. Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350 at 2811. And in the Coral Sea area around Gladstone, 4702. Another postcode up there too, 4741, also showing. Then we go to another Queensland postcode, Craignish, 4655 at 2425. And Westmead in New South Wales at 2145, Hornsby 2077, and DY and North Curlcurl, that's postcode 2099. Now, the interesting observation here is that many of these have higher gross yields, but in terms of net investment yields, in other words, the cost of the property versus the income from the rental, it is no longer working. So you would expect to see more investment properties in these areas coming on the market ahead. Finally, financial stress, the overall summary. In the postcode 2170 Liverpool, there are 28,800 households in financial stress. They're at the top of the list. Then we have Toowoomba, postcode 4350 with 27,000. Campbelltown, 2560 with 22,900. Victorian postcode 3029, 21,700. Point Cook and Werribee, postcode 3030 with 19,300. Cranbourne, 3977 with 18,000. Centre of Melbourne, postcode 3000 with 17,700. Ballarat, regional postcode 3350 at 17,500. Mount Druitt in New South Wales at 2770 at 16,900. Ipswich, postcode 4305 at 16,500. Westmead, postcode 2145 at 16,077. And postcode 3064 at Roxburgh Park in Craigieburn, Donnybrook, with more than 15,800 households in financial pressure. So we often see high mortgage stress, high rental stress, and even high investor stress all sitting in those same postcodes, which is why we end up where we do. Now, as to what's going to happen ahead, of course, it depends on what interest rates are going to do, and that's where our scenarios come into play. So if we look at our scenarios, this is a way of exploring different futures and to consider the consequences. It's not a forecast, but it's showing you how things may play out. None of these scenarios may turn out to be right. Things change. And we use the framework driven from our core market model, and we look at three potential outcomes updated with the latest data and the results, and the scenarios run forward from the end of December. So we have three views: the best, the Goldilocks zone, which is where rates stay at 4.35% full later in 2025. Inflation eases in line with the RBA expectations as wages rise faster. We don't get a recession in Australia and migration remains above average. The base case is what I call the soft landing, where rates stay at 4.35% through the bulk of 2025. Inflation falls, but then later rises and stays above target until 2026. So we don't get a recession in Australia, but we do see a fall in migration. And the worst, the nightmare scenario, where we see rates rise above 4.35% in 2025, that would put mortgage rates up in the sort of 7.25% area, and they stay high into 2026 along with inflation, while unemployment rises and wages growth stalls due to recession locally, and the rates are then cut, but migration falls below average. Now, it is possible to make up lots of other scenarios, but those are the ones that I use in my modelling. As a result of that, and here's the Western Australian scenario. In the best case scenario, there is still upside potential for houses in Western Australia. In the best case, perhaps even another 18% rise over the next 3 years. On the other hand, if we move towards our base case, then overall, cumulatively, not a huge rise over the next 3 years at all. And in case the worst happens, prices would fall, units would follow on, and they tend to move in a similar fashion, but maybe not quite as much. On the other hand, in Victoria, even in the best case, it's hard to see any price growth in the immediate future, maybe a couple of percent over 3 years. On the base case scenario, further falls are likely, and the worst case scenario for houses, a very significant fall, units would tend to follow on. In Queensland, the best case is still further rises, maybe 15% over 3 years if everything goes really well. But the base case is a fall of around 4% over 3 years, and the worst case, a very significant fall, maybe down 24% over 3 years. Units, again, follow on. Tasmanian prices, best case is pretty much flat, maybe a 3% rise over 3 years. The base case, a fall, perhaps down 16% over 3 years. And the worst case, a more considerable fall. Units, again, following on. South Australia, there is still upside potential, maybe 70% over 3 years. In the best case, the base case, though, is showing a small fall, maybe a couple of percent over 3 years. And the worst case is a very significant fall, around 22%. And units, again, follow on. In the ACT, the best case scenario is a small rise over 3 years for houses, maybe up 3%. The base case is a fall, down 16%, and the worst case a fall of 36%. And again, units follow on. New South Wales, the best case scenario, well, there is still some potential for further rises on average across the place, with maybe 9% over 3 years, but only in the best case. In the base case, a 10% fall over 3 years is most likely, and the worst case, very considerable fall of perhaps 30% over 3 years. And units follow on, falling not quite as much in the worst case scenario. In the NT, it's hard to know because the numbers are so small, but you can see here that the best case suggests rises, the base case sideways, the worst case a fall. Units following on. And the aggregate price scenario data for Australia says that in the best case, over the next 12 months, maybe a rise of between 3 and 4%. And over the next 3 years, a rise of 10%. But on the base case, a fall of about 2% over the next 12 months and 9% over 3 years. And the worst case would be a fall of 7% over the next 12 months and 29% over 3 years. Units tending to follow similar trends. Now, I do have this data down to an individual postcode level, and I'll be running a live show in a couple of weeks where we'll go through this in detail, and you can ask me about a particular postcode if you'd like me to do a deep dive. But I will just highlight, I always look at this particular one, Wollongong, which is one I know really well, that if you look at the monthly disposable income that we're seeing here, you can see here that typically now we're seeing households in this particular postcode with 40% of their disposable monthly income going to pay the mortgage and around 32% going on the typical rent. And perhaps not surprising then that we do see some stress in this particular postcode for both mortgage and rental stress. And again, we can look at the scenarios at an individual level as well. Now, just before I close out this show, I will just say, of course, that we can't expect a get-out-of-jail card from the government with regard to housing affordability, despite what they say. Most of the initiatives they're talking about, building the 1.2 million homes over 5 years, is unlikely to be able to be delivered for all sorts of reasons that we've discussed previously. And the political fight, of course, will be around housing as we move into the election this year. So it's down to individual households to try and get a grip on their finances. And with that thought, firstly, if you do have significant pressures, it's worth talking to people who know what to do when things go difficult. The National Debt Helpline, 1-800-007-007, is my recommended source of help. Don't just Google, because you could find yourself in all sorts of areas and people will start charging for things they shouldn't be charging for. But the National Debt Helpline, the government-backed helpline, is definitely a point of support. In addition, there is a very useful tool on the AFCA's website. That is a statement of financial position. And the tool there allows you to put in what you earn, what you owe, what your living expenses are, and what you own. And that form can be completed by way of a PDF, and you can take that then to your financial firm or financial counsellor. And it really does help to understand how your finances are progressing at the moment. Quite often I find that households aren't really across their cash flow. So what money's coming in, what money's going out, where is the money being spent on? So assembling data about where the money flows are going is really helpful to manage the negative cash flow vortex that many people have. Now, of course, that leads to some rather difficult conversations about what should you be spending money on versus what you are spending money on. And generally, what I see is that households are perhaps sometimes making relatively bad decisions about what they're spending the money on, but often because they don't know, they don't have the data at their fingertips. So getting that data together is really quite powerful. Then you can make some prioritization decisions. What's important versus what's critical? And in some cases, by rejiggling your finances, you can keep your head above water. Also, of course, it's interesting that quite often when you go talk to the bank, they'll talk about restructuring, extending the life of the loan, may be going interest only for a period. Now, that may help in the short term, but interestingly, ASIC's recent report highlighted that quite often those extend and pretend strategies ultimately don't help. They just push people down the road, but unless they change their spending behavior, they don't necessarily get themselves into a better position. So this is really important. It's down to individuals' decisions and what they actually decide to do to manage their finances better. Now, if you're interested in getting the data set for the work that I do, it is available. And in fact, I want to say thank you to all of those who support us via the Patreon programs. There are various tiers, but the one I want to highlight today is the $50 a month plus GST. You can actually join at this tier. And if you do, you can then get the full data set for all of the postcodes that I cover, more than 2,000 postcodes each month, and get the latest there. Also, if you want more information about what I do, check my blog. The link is there. And it's also in the notes below, because there I publish all of my research. And that gives you perhaps even more insight than what I can put in a video. So that's it. We've covered the highlights in our show today. But in summary, what we're seeing is that the dream of owning property has become a nightmare for many. The cash flow pressures are still continuing to build. And given everything that we see with regard to the RBA's inability to cut rates soon and the pressure on households, we would expect more difficult months ahead. Therefore, it's down to individuals grasping the nettle and managing their finances. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.